Welcome to Bodcast, the Business of Dentistry podcast, brought to you by Practice Plan. Bodcast delivers the best business advice, real-life stories, and practical hints and tips to make your practice a more profitable and sustainable business. And now, here's your host.
Hi, my name is Les Jones. I'm the creative director at Practice Plan. And in this latest edition of our podcast, I'm here today with Mike Bullitt from We Know Dental. Hi, Mike.
Good evening or good afternoon, where we are quite in the day today, Les. But yes, good afternoon. How are you?
Very well. So Mike's here to talk all things website and to hopefully demystify some of the kind of dark arts of getting a successful dental website up and running. Before we get into that, Mike, just for our listeners' sake, just give us a little introduction to yourself and how you got into producing websites.
Well, thank you very much, Les. We Know Dental is actually part of a group of marketing businesses based down in the West Country, and we're about 27 years old, so we've been around the block a little bit. But my best friend, my best man, is a dentist, contacted me about 13 years ago and said, I'm going to start a squat. Can you help me with branding, website, that sort of stuff? We knew absolutely nothing about dental marketing, and we've probably got an enormous amount still to learn 13 years later. But along that journey, we've been working with people like IDH. So we looked after IDH, my dentist now, for about 6.5 years for the whole of their marketing. We currently look after people like the BACD, the British Academy of Cosmetic Dentistry, and a number of practices up and down the country. So in the website area, I think this year we'll have built our 700th dental website. So hopefully we've made all the mistakes that you could probably make.
So you know a little bit more than you probably let in on.
Well, we may be able to help answer a few questions, maybe.
So you and I might go into a lot of dental practices up and down the country. One of the things that we hear quite often is, my website's not working. And not working in terms of a functional kind of thing, but not working in terms of what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
I presume you come across that question all the time.
Today, no exception. As recently as probably within the last hour or so, I've been asked exactly that sort of question. What are we doing wrong? So I think perhaps the first answer to that question is actually lies with the start of the process of building a website, which is, you know, what was the brief? Mm-hmm. I think, you know, you and I probably, as marketing people, we like a brief. I think the approach to websites should be absolutely no different. And I think part of the problem sometimes lies in there wasn't that discussion at the start of the project. Mm-hmm. So what ultimately gets built is, I'm not going to quite say a wing and a prayer, but ultimately it perhaps doesn't bear any relation to what the practice now wants that website to deliver. So first bit of advice, if you like, is if you're certainly looking at improving your current website, go back to that. Go back to the objectives and try and set out something that says, oh, hang on a minute. You know, this is the kind of stuff that we would like our website to generate for the practice, whether it's new patient inquiries or perhaps a focus on a particular treatment and inquiries for that particular thing. That then forms the basis of everything else that should follow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So based on your experience of, you know, 700 websites in the dental space, what would you say are the critical elements of a good website for a dental practice?
Okay, so we've talked about the brief, that's definitely number one. What that tends to do in our process is define objectives quite sensibly at the level of inquiries that you'd want that website to deliver, either on a weekly or monthly basis, for the different services or treatments that you offer. So if it's a general dentist inquiry that you're looking for, we'd like to write that down and say, you know, how many of those are we actually looking to generate from the website? In terms of the rest of the process that follows from that, we actually then translate those objectives into a structure plan for the website. And here's the first thing that we've probably learnt along the way. We've actually got two audiences for most dental websites. The first one is the patient, quite understandably. But actually, Mr. Google is the second visitor to our website. And usually, Mr. Google has a bit of a priority in the process, because most patients will find the website via something like the Google search engine. Mm-hmm. And therefore, we want your website to appear on those search results, what's called the SERP, the S-E-R-P, which is the search engine results page. And when you appear on that page, you're actually in there for sort of good shape to get traffic to the website and ultimately generate the inquiries that were part of that original brief, part of that original objective.
So you just touched on the kind of the search engine type stuff there, and you know, we both know that you can have the best website in the world, but if people can't find it or get to it, then it's not going to work for you. So a phrase that most dental practices might be familiar with, SEO, search engine optimization, but it's a little bit of a mystery, isn't it?
It's a dark art, Les. If you need entry to the club, I'll have to take you through the initiation process.
Yeah. Well, just explain in kind of layman's terms what search engine optimization is.
Okay. So joking aside, actually, I think one of the things I'd like to say straight out for anybody listening to this podcast is it's not a dark art. Actually, Google is exceptionally helpful to companies like us when we build a website. They actually give us a kind of top 10 guide. Mm-hmm. So it shouldn't be a dark art, and anybody that's perhaps talking to dental practices and making it out to be something mysterious and very complicated is actually probably doing a little bit of a disservice. It's very straightforward, and I use a couple of analogies when I get asked this type of question. If we're looking for a much simpler proposition, dental practices are actually quite complicated in terms of the range of services and treatments that they offer. If you're looking for something simple, like let's say a taxi in Stafford, if you're building a website for a taxi firm in Stafford, it's a very simple proposition. You need that website to appear in a set of search results for a search like taxi Stafford.
Yeah.
So what you do in the construction of the website is focused on those keywords and making sure that Google understands that your website is a good match. So actually, one of the questions that's missing in SEO discussions is often, what are the keywords and what are the search phrases that your potential customers, patients will use to find the dental practice or the treatments that you offer? I've got an example from today, actually, where we were looking at a website that's been built by a company for a dental practice. It's not actually delivering the results that they want and expected, which is a shame. But we looked at a particular area, which was adult orthodontics and teeth straightening. And actually what the website is populated heavily with is the opposite, i.e. the condition. The website talks about crooked teeth and talks about alignment in the way that it's actually a problem, not a solution. So when you start as a patient journey examining how people find tooth straightening solutions, brands are much more visible these days. I shouldn't perhaps name drop too much, but you know, there are the firm favourites that probably some of our listeners will know about. They've actually been doing quite good work with their own branding. So patients are now recognising that there are systems called X and Y. Equally, they know the condition. My teeth are crooked. My teeth need straightening. So actually what you populate the website with is those kind of keywords that Google will play back in the way that your website should appear on that search engine. So there's a job of work to do in terms of understanding what a patient will use in a search engine, and then there's another job of work to match that with what you're building.
So there's one job, isn't there, in terms of getting yourself on the first page of some search results, or to number one if you can. It's another thing keeping yourself there over a long period of time. So,
absolutely.
So what things should dental practices be looking at in terms of maintaining their kind of level of search engine optimization?
Okay, so let's just sort of wind back to the challenge of being number one on page one. So that's actually an output of competition. If there was only one dental website in Stafford, we would probably be able to say with some confidence that there's a good chance we could get you to position one on page one. But we live in a world where there's competition for most things, and particularly on the internet, that is a massively growing issue. There is more and more competition. So being successful is a measure of, first and foremost, how good are our competitors? Because if they're poor at the SEO type of challenge, you won't have to work very hard to be number one. So that's a bit of good news that might come as a gift. However, more and more people are understanding that this is part of what they need to be doing on an ongoing basis. So although you may be number one today, the likelihood is that your competitors will change their website, will build a new website, will improve the SEO of their own websites, and as a result of that, you may start to drop down the rankings. Mm-hmm. There are these big occasions in the SEO world where Google will change its algorithm. And by the way, I keep talking about Google. Google is really the only search engine that we tend to worry about. It's about 99 point something percent of all the UK searches at the moment. Microsoft are trying quite hard with their product, but at the moment it's still an outsider. So now and again, Google will update its algorithm, will move the goalposts in terms of how it's using its own search engine algorithms, regrettably it doesn't publish that change very openly. So I don't know if you know, but Google actually protects its algorithm each time it changes it. It files it in a patent office, so you can't see it. So we're guessing. We have to do some educated guesswork about what that means. And there's a lot of stuff and nonsense sometimes talked about. You know, oh, crikey, it now means that we should have reviews. Reviews are the thing that, let me tell you, that on the kind of volume of websites that we operate, we run nearly about 1,000 websites for various people in and outside of dentistry. I can tell you that the 98% of that search engine job is done on the page, on the website. It's not anything to do with whether I'm in social media, have lots of reviews, have lots of backlinks. All of that sort of stuff that sometimes get banded around is a very, very tiny proportion compared to the fact that I've got a website that if I want to rank highly for tooth whitening in Stoke, there has to be some content that Google can access on my website that matches that type of keyword and search term. If we do that, arguably, we've gone a long way down the road of being successful. So that's the start of that. So in terms of the ongoing job, it's really a matter of having a process or a routine in, let's say, your monthly marketing activity which checks. I'll probably like to highlight that that's a bit of a challenge in itself. Because again, perhaps a bit of advice is, if you use your own computer, your own laptop, your own devices to measure what you believe to be your ranking position, you're immediately going to get a skewed result. That's because most modern browsers, Chrome, Edge, all of the browsers that we use tend to use on a day-to-day basis, are trying desperately hard to be helpful. And as such, they store searches that you make and replay the results of those in a priority. So every time you use a search for a dentist in Stoke, what you're actually doing is perpetuating the higher result that that will get.
Right.
So you need to use a third-party service. There are a couple. The two big ones in the world are called Moz and Semrush. They tend to give you a, have to say, not inexpensive solution for this. But what those guys do is effectively act like a vanilla search. So they start from a blank sheet of paper, and if you load that system with a search term like dentist in Stoke, what it should give you is a pretty accurate result of where you currently stand.
Right.
So the first step in your ongoing battle is to say, how am I ranking? That's the first challenge. Once you know where you stand, then you can also use systems like Moz and Semrush to give you a bit of third-party analysis, where those systems will pretend to be Google and will give you some very good advice about whether the, you know, the page on your website that you would like to call your tooth whitening page is actually performing as well as it could be compared to the competition. So it will always be looking at, you know, your competitors. And the other part of that is then it acts like a to-do list and says these are the things that you could change or improve. So it gives you a measure and then it gives you recommendations. So, you know, the short answer, Les, is I'm afraid I cheat. I use a third-party system and I follow what they tell me to do. And, I'm afraid we're not an SEO ninja as such, but we know where to go to find one.
Yeah,
so that's probably the answer.
Well, I've sat in your talk today, Mike, at the dental showcase, which was fascinating. And one of the things that you talked about in that talk was the concept of buyer behaviour. And how important that is in kind of putting your website together and structuring your website. Do you want to just give us a little overview of what you mean by buyer behavior?
Yeah, sure. So there's some sort of fairly deep-rooted psychology that I think you're being a bit, kind about this. I think you probably understand this is probably much better than me. But yeah, there's some deep-rooted psychology, and we've had the benefit of working with some companies both in and outside of dentistry where we spent a long time studying this. I actually worked with Audi UK for nearly a year of my life studying buyer behaviour in the context of car buying. And what we found was that a lot of the learnings from that we could apply to different industries, and certainly dentistry is one of those. So, for example, in that buyer behaviour, we were able to fundamentally address three questions. There are three key questions that we look at. What are the influences or the triggers that start people actively looking to purchase a product or a service? What are the references that they use to find a supplier or a provider of that? And then last but not least, what is the process that they go through? So most buyer behaviour studies cover those sort of three key questions. So if we look at dentistry, for example, a very obvious trigger is pain. Mm-hmm. A lot of people start a journey for looking for a dental practice or a provider when they're in trouble. The website now plays a part because it becomes the reference. Where do I go to find? So online has quickly become one of the easiest ways for patients to say, get me an emergency dentist, where do I find one? And then the interesting one in the process tent is sometimes it's not as easy as, you know, they find my website, they pick up the phone, they call me. If it's a considered purchase, like an expensive treatment, they might phone two or three dentists. They may look at, I actually know cases of patients that have two or three independent sort of separate assessments or examinations before they make a decision because it's a very expensive decision they're making. So certainly the website becomes a part of that journey, and again the buyer behaviour understanding helps us to provide information on the website that, you know, convinces the patient that perhaps what they're looking at is the right provider and that they should pick up the phone or fill in the web form and make contact.
So it's quite an art, isn't it? You know, in terms of putting a website together that will fundamentally deliver on the objectives for a practice. Where can, you know, practices listen to this podcast? Where can they go for help?
Well, I'll provide our web address as one lazy. No, I'm joking. So yes, of course. So I think the first thing that I would probably suggest to most people is to start with your current web provider.
Yeah.
Most of the dental practices that I know of have a website. There's one or two that don't, but a lot of the ones that are thinking about marketing certainly will have gone down that road. So I think this might be a good opportunity to perhaps take a few minutes and take a look at the website, ask a few questions around the performance of the website, and use some of the information that hopefully you have in the practice about the performance. And the real one for me is the bums on seats one. Mm-hmm. For me, it's all about phone calls and web forms that are being filled in. So we like to recommend in our solutions that you find a way, and there are several solutions for this, to track the phone calls that are specifically coming from the website. And if you take a look at that and perhaps then match that to the original question you asked at the start of this podcast, which was all about, you know, I'm a little bit disappointed about that. What are the things that you want the website to deliver? How many inquiries a week, a month? Go back to that and say, well, how am I doing at the moment? If the answer is not as well as I'd like, then you need to strike up a conversation about, right, what can we do to change? The answer to that will be from the sublime to the ridiculous. There are probably things that might be able to be done with the current website. Unfortunately, I've just had a conversation with a lady not long ago where the answer to her problem is to start again.
Right.
It's that broken.
Yeah.
So,
you know. But as needs must.
Well, I'm not going to turn away the business, that's for certain. But you know, genuinely, there are certain websites and platforms where it's easy to make changes and to perhaps take something that exists and modify it. This is a scenario where that's not the case. So, regrettably, we're kind of faced with starting from scratch.
Finally, Mike, 700 dental practices that you're working on their websites. You must have some pretty good evidence of what happens when you get it right, the difference a really good website can make to a dental practice.
Yes, so without naming names, I'll talk about some recent activity that we've done for a practice in Liverpool. We were running a campaign focused around adult orthodontics, and we used a combination of the website and some digital marketing to promote this particular treatment. So I can tell you, because the stats are at the top of my head, that we generated in 3 weeks and 4 days 467 inquiries, measurable. And we converted 12.06% of those. So 55 people took an adult orthodontic treatment. So we put about £150,000 worth of business into that practice in just under a month.
Right. Well, you know, the evidence is there, isn't it? And I suppose, you know, for those dental practices who look at producing a website as a cost, they need to get past that and see it very much as an investment into their business that's going to bring those kind of returns.
I think very much so, and I think I find it very difficult sometimes when we look at websites that have been built for an enormous amount of money and they haven't done the thing that we talked about a few minutes ago, which is to set out those sorts of objectives. You know, let's talk pounds and pence. What is it that you want your website to deliver for you? If you can translate treatments and services that you provide into pounds and pence, look at what the potential, you know, return would be, it's a little bit of an easier decision to then say, okay, well, this might cost me a few thousand pounds to build a decent website. It shouldn't be tens of thousands. Unfortunately, I've seen that it can be, but that's, I have to say, an overpriced solution. But it should be a decent investment. Mm. And of all the marketing that you do, it's probably going to be right up there at the top of the list as a priority. So for me, especially if you have some options to perhaps spread the costs, you know, arguably it's a piece of infrastructure, like a piece of equipment, like a scanner, like a chair. To me, it sits in that same category. If it costs you a few grand, amortize that over a couple of years. That's a good investment.
Wise words, Mike, and fascinating stuff. Thank you ever so much for sharing your experience with us today.
Thanks, Les. Pleasure.
Catch you next time. Thank you
very much.